Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. Dan Lust joined this week by the newly anointed, soon-to-be lawyer, Zach Bryson. Congrats on your recent accomplishments.
Well, thank you, Dan. It was, you know, a dark couple months where I was a little bit of a hermit, you know, not talking to anyone, not doing anything while I was studying.
Studying for the bar. This is the accomplishment, passing the bar. We congratulate you here.
And glad that the studying's over and the waiting's over, and I can say that I did pass and that we'll be sworn in a few short weeks, and now can be on podcast with you again, Dan.
It's all good. North Carolina, right? That's where you're trying to get admitted?
Yes, although the score was high enough to transfer to any UBE jurisdiction, so I'm good to go.
Humble brag, my friend. Congratulations. You always know where you are when you get the news, when you pass the bar, you read that, you get the email, you see the PDF, you try to scroll down. It's like very similar to like when you were in college and it was, you get the letters in the mail, like, you know, we regret to inform you or this. I applied early decision to Union College, my parents' school. So I didn't really get that experience, but I understand what that is from movies and stuff when they're like all nervous opening letters. But okay. We are recording this at 4:55 on Friday, April 12th. We don't want to go behind the scenes too much. We had a big guest planned for early in the week who did not come through. So we decided to reassess. We'd see what the week takes us. And really going to cover one topic on this episode. And Zach was so kind to join on late notice. It's just the two of us this episode. And I think this topic, the Shohei Ohtani topic, is big enough that it required its own episode. Where, you know, at some point, maybe Wallach and I will grab our special guest that bailed on us. But that person, he or she, not calling anybody out, shall remain nameless. The news as of today, and Zach, I'm going to go to you in a minute for the actual charges. Ipe Mizuhara, the interpreter for Shohei Ohtani, is now facing some very serious federal charges. Zach, before we get into it, can you be so kind as to enlighten us with these very serious federal charges?
Absolutely. So like Dan said, it's Friday the 12th. These charges were filed in California District Court yesterday, the 11th. And Dan, interestingly, the only charge listed on the filing happens to be bank fraud. I thought there'd be more than one, but having one and then 37 pages to kind of back up the affidavits there, but bank fraud, so wire fraud, and with a maximum statutory sentence of up to 30 years.
Okay. So appreciate that, Zach. I put my hand up for a second. I will admit that on the podcast, I'm sure, and I know in my classes, and I've done different talks in between them, I was very skeptical of this Ipe Mizuhara cover-up. I assumed, probably incorrectly, as I come on this podcast and I say innocent until proven guilty, let's not assume anything, and I'm sure I had those caveats, but I said the story seems very dubious. It was very dubious that that amount of money, which at the time was a couple million dollars, goes missing and Shohei doesn't know about it. And had the story change? How did they do an interview with ESPN and change the story afterwards? It seems like the lawyers may have messed up. Zach, I'm going to throw my hands up here. And if you're listening to this and you were of that same opinion, I have been changed after reading a 37-page federal complaint. So for some background, in the history of sports, and I'll just put it bluntly, sports, I'm getting my chimney fixed. This is going to be a problem because my dog is going to freak the F out. Keep this in. Harper, do not bark. Do not edit this out of the podcast. People need to know that Harper is a really good dog most of the time. Sometimes she barks at the chimney guy. Okay. Anyway, moving on. So in the history of sports, right, you know, when you're trying to protect somebody, be it the other refs in the Tim Donaghy situation, I'm certainly of the opinion that, like, the NBA, you know, federal government, sometimes might do some shenanigans. I was on this podcast a couple years ago talking about the Evander Kane situation, that his ex-wife was out on Instagram saying, I know for a fact that he bet on his team to lose, and Gary Bettman, you know about it. And I'm like, what happened to that investigation? Doesn't really make sense. What happened to him? You know, you can go through the history, right? The Major League Baseball wanted to nail Pete Rose. And like, guess what? So I'm certainly of the opinion that there has been instances in the past of leagues, law enforcement, working with one another to cover things up, so to speak. Even the tanking situation with the Miami Dolphins and their owner, Tank for Tua, Brian Flores, saying that the owner coaxed him to try to lose games on purpose. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm like, at least one of those is a cover-up, right? Okay. So as I read this 37-page federal complaint, which, Zach, you have seen, I just retweeted it. It should be the top post on my Twitter feed. I no longer think this was a cover-up. I think this was someone in very badly with for gambling debt, and they committed a massive fraud against Shohei Ohtani. So, Zach, I have my thoughts. I want to pass it to you. You'll see in the background over my window that the chimney guy is popping up there. So do not think that is a robber trying to climb in my window. Chimney guy.
Duly noted there, Dan.
So what are you where did you fall on this? And I don't want to, it's sometimes podcasts are better if you disagree. Are you still of the opinion that this is a Shohei Ohtani cover-up that Major League Baseball is involved in?
You know, Dan, I was similar to you. I even sent you something, you know, really recently that was, you know, kind of still kind of skeptical about it. But after digging a little bit deeper, reading it, it doesn't seem as much, you know, there's a little bit that you kind of want that makes you think, like, how do you, I would love to be in Shohei's position where I could miss 16 million, but.
So I think the number, and I should probably have this. You can fact check me. I believe the number is 40 million in net total gambling losses. So it's a lot of money. People can say, people are laughing about 120 million loss and 80 million won. How could he do so much volume betting 25 bets a day and whatever? I'm not really concerned with how much was bet. It's a lot of money. And as you noted, Zach, this is a sports law podcast. We've got to talk about what the charges here and their bank fraud. So the part that's underreported, people are like, you know, Jeff Passan, you know, saying, you know, Ipe admitting to this crime. So people, the baseball fans care about, was it Shohei? Is Shohei going to get suspended? Like, you know, yes, I'm concerned about that. But like, it's not really what this podcast is going to be about. I read the 37-page complaint. This is very damning text messages. And I think we'll put them into three categories. Text messages, or we'll say three categories of evidence. Text messages between the bookie and Ipe Mizuhara, okay? I was of the opinion that, yeah, this was probably Shohei's account. There's a cover-up. No, these are text messages dating back to September of 2021. Pretty consistent text messages. And they read like the text messages of a degenerate, not like, like sometimes I joke, like I have a group chat with my college friends, like, you know, D-Generation X, right? You know, little fun play on words. This guy was a degenerate. He was, you know, in the hole for a lot. He kept saying, I'm losing. Can you extend me? Last time, I promise I won't ask for another extension. So this guy was down bad. And, you know, it's unclear from the text messages what, you know, I wish I had his text messages next to how much his account was in arrears. But what the text message shows, this bookmaker saying, hey, you know, you got to pay, you're getting me in trouble over here. You got to pay. So you got to settle up on some of your debt. Do you have, Zach, I know we talked about this. Do you have one of these down bad quotes?
Oh yeah. There's one that's on page 16 of the complaint where it says the bookmaker messaged his interpreter saying, you're putting me in a position where this is going to get out of control. If I don't hear from you by the end of the day, it's going to be out of my hands. So it's not just like, you know, a little bit of money or a little bit of time. He's getting in some hot water. And then his response back was, again, quote, to be honest with you, I'm really struggling right now and need some time before I start to make payments. So it's not a little bit of money. It's not a little bit of gambling debt. It's some big, really down bad stuff.
And if you go through the text, I mean, you feel kind of bad for the guy. He's like, I just tried to wire you 50 grand. It's not working. And then it's like June 2nd, June 3rd. I just tried again, June 4th. It's not letting it happen. So this, like 6 days in a row, he's claiming that he's unable to wire money. So you feel for this guy in some sense. He was down really, really bad. And all of a sudden, like, you know, the check got lost in the mail. It's like every excuse why he couldn't pay. So this guy was down really, really bad. Okay. So here's where, you know, so you're understanding. And if you go through the text and it looks like, hey, I'll wire you. And he's like, hey, the wire went through for 40,000. I'll send you another 500 a week. So at some point, the check stops getting lost in the mail. And at some point, payments start to be made to this bookmaker and they start adding up. And as you know, it's been reported, eventually money gets paid to this bookmaker in the millions, tens of millions of dollars. Okay. Where is the money coming from? How did these payments start to get started? This is where, and I listen, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I don't know if anybody knew this before him. Don't quote me on the dates. It's ballpark and people can read the complaint. But at some point in 2021, right when this Ipe Mizuhara started dealing with this bookmaker, so Shohei Ohtani has worked with Ipe Mizuhara since he's been in the major leagues. From 2018 to 2021, as far as we know, Ipe Mizuhara is not down bad with this illegal bookmaker. I don't know, maybe he's in bed with somebody else, but this is the one that we care about.
Well, also, Dan, you know, he was there. There's the fact that he was also lying about his college degree, too. So there's, you know, sketchiness there.
Important.
But yeah, sketchiness starting in 2021. Go on.
No, the whole thing is sketchy. This guy is you're not wrong. We covered this with Wallach, but like the guy is lying about his background. The guy is saying he went to, I think, Riverside. He said he was a translator for the Boston Red Sox with Hideki Okajima. Like, no, he wasn't. So the Red Sox said that wasn't true. Riverside. So like the guy has a bunch of red flags already. This is where the bank fraud seems to occur. So from 2018 to 2021, no issues, not on any of the bookmaking. Ipe Mizuhara meets this guy in 2021. And all of a sudden, Shohei Ohtani, I guess, has a couple bank accounts. And this is from the complaint. It's not me pulling it out of anywhere. In 2021, Shohei Ohtani, from 2018 to 2021, before that, Shohei Ohtani has one account that, according to federal investigators, basically it was just deposits from his Major League Baseball salary. So auto deposit going in. Shohei Ohtani is making millions of dollars. So he has other bank accounts. Like I work with, you know, sports agents and they control certain bank accounts and other ones control this and they have joint bank accounts. Doesn't really matter. But endorsements, I guess we're going, you know, generally when you do an endorsement or something, the payment gets sent to the agent and then, you know, the agent will send it back or it'll go to the moneymaker. It doesn't matter, but there's separate bank accounts involved. So at some point in time, Ipe Mizuhara allegedly went to the bank changed the contact information on the bank, on this bank account, to his. It was an email associated with his own. There are recorded phone calls in which someone using Ipe Mizuhara's phone is pretending to be victim A, who is obviously Shohei Ohtani, and saying, like, change the bank account. Please wire this. I'm trying to wire money to this person who is an illegal bookmaker and for a car loan, and it's not going through. Please help me. So it's not... This would be the most elaborate cover-up in the history of cover-ups. Ipe Mizuhara is alleged to have changed the bank account information and that Shohei didn't know about it. And to make matters worse, over the years, I guess the agent Shohei Ohtani asked, according to this complaint, what's going on with this bank account? How much is in it? What's going on with it? And Ipe Mizuhara said, Shohei wants this to be a private bank account and doesn't want anyone to know what's in it. And had anybody had access to it that wasn't, Ipe was the only one that seemed to have access to it, it would see that these withdrawals were coming out in very large quantities. So that's the bank fraud. That's the big charge here. We can talk in a minute about, and I'll recant some of my old statements about how I sort of thought things happened, but I think that that's all this was. I think this was a translator who had way too much control over the situation, and so I didn't speak great English, and apparently everybody worked through the interpreter. The agent would ask questions, the interpreter wouldn't text Shohei Ohtani from 100 different angles. I just think this is a rogue gambler that Shohei can be blamed for, you know, getting into bed with him, so to speak. But I do confidently think that's what happened. It's not a Shohei cover-up.
Yeah, definitely doesn't sound like a Shohei cover-up. But and the thing that also struck me, Dan, is that Ipe was supposed to be, or really was, the point of contact between his accountant, his financial advisor, CAA, and his agency. And being in that position of, you know, kind of control and trust is really what allowed him to have this fraud continue for several years. And then the, you know, calling the banks and saying, let's set up a new account. Let's have me, the one in control. Let's not show it to the agent who's asking questions. Is certainly, I mean, all of the evidence is pretty striking in the complaint. Obviously, innocent until proven guilty. But I mean, even I think towards the end, Dan, there's a quote where, you know, Ipe was texting the bookie again and basically confesses almost. I don't know if you caught that one at the end, but it's literally him saying, "Oh, I technically kind of did steal from him. This is the end for me." And it's just kind of crazy how he was able to pull this off for, you know, a number of years and have no one the wiser and no one question why he's the only point of contact really controlling the narrative.
We have an update. As of an hour ago, he paid Mizzou hours to turn himself into federal prosecutors, and he has a initial court appearance in Friday afternoon in Los Angeles. I don't believe we have an update on that. I think he's expected to plead guilty, but we'll see. Well, maybe Zach, you can look that up while we go through it. If there's an update, which would be cool if we had one on the podcast. So, yeah, I mean, that's seemingly what it boils down to. Shohei Ohtani, I mean, and this actually, I think, is pretty important too. People are wondering how this story possibly happened. You know, when ESPN reached out for comment, and then Ipe Mizuhara popped up and gave this version of events to Tisha Thompson at ESPN, who's been on our podcast before. And then, like, the lawyers for Shohei were like, actually, whatever that guy said is a lie, and that didn't happen. And, like, something odd happened that is bizarre. And now we know, at least according to the federal complaint, what happened. Apparently, this came up, and, you know, Ipe apparently told Shohei Ohtani that he – so the story was that Ipe claimed that Shohei agreed to pay off his gambling debts. And Shohei didn't even know about anything. Apparently his English is that bad. He didn't understand what was going on in a team meeting about the story about federal things coming up. And Ipe was translating it the whole time. Ipe Mizuhara told, allegedly, according to his complaint, told the agent and told his team, yeah, Shohei told me this was okay. And like blasphemy is the right word, like the gall of Ipe Mizuhara to just tell people, yeah, Shohei told everybody this was okay. Like, how was this not going to get found out? And the sad truth is that had he gone to Shohei 3 years prior, 2.5 years prior, this thing probably would have gone away, but it continued to mushroom and mushroom and mushroom. And it's almost a shock that this didn't get caught for 2.5 years. So if anybody, there is a question mark here, and I have a little question mark. I'm not sure how no one saw this. Like, I'm on, you know, I'm on teams. I work with athletes that have big teams of people, money managers, lawyers, this, like, somebody should have caught it. So I don't know who the fault is unnecessarily, but that's still a little bit of a red flag to me, but very small in comparison. I just think that was general team incompetence, not cover-up incompetence.
Right, but there is something to that, Dan. I mean, you know, as much as it is clear at this point that it was, you know, Shohei wasn't really involved, and it was Ipe, first of all, 100% agree that it is, you know, the more that's come out, it explains why there was conflicting narratives. Because if Ipe is going to be, you know, talking on Shohei's behalf, and he doesn't really have the best English skills in a team meeting or something and fully understanding it, then he can say really whatever he wants there. And so he can try to spin the narrative, which is why we get conflicting things. But to your point of how it didn't get caught, I mean, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars in won bets, hundreds of thousands of dollars in lost bets, equating to over $40 million in
quite losses. Quite a few more lost bets than won bets.
Yeah. But you're talking, you know, a bunch of bets. He's placing 25 a day. And from my understanding, MLB has one of the it's a really strict policy where not even people who work for a team, even if you're just in the front office, can bet on can I don't know if it's just baseball, but participate in sports betting. And so if that's the case, you've got to have, you know, you have people that look into this. Ipe is one of those people that's on the staff. How do you miss that for several years? Convenient, miss that.
Unexplained. I think Ipe Mizuhara, who was, again, the interpreter, he was his assistant, his like de facto manager. I think he just had way too much control. And it's a little scary. It is what it is. I don't know if there's that much more to say about this topic. I think, and when you kind of piece this out into the grand scheme of things, again, for those, maybe we're here, maybe this episode just convincing the doubters. Actually, I'll take a quick pause. My dog Harper was being very good and then had a little bit of bout of the bark. So this chimney guy must be done. So if you're wondering, I give her like a solid A-, B+, but you know, I had to kick her out. She's barking a little bit too much. Okay. So, I did presentations today. So I think I've talked about this on the podcast. I teach, cause I'm a crazy person. I teach at New York Law School on Mondays. And, I wanted to, for no apparent reason, teach at Pace Law School for Fridays, because it'd be really fun to teach two classes in a semester. That was not a good idea because it's a lot of work. But anyway, I had presentations today, and somebody, we had two presentations on sports law advocacy. Somebody did a topic on Evander Kane, why he's very fresh for me, and someone else did a topic on Pete Rose, both of which are very fresh and relevant. So Evander Kane was accused of betting on hockey, on his own team to lose. Now, Shohei, apparently in all these bets, right, some will say this is very convenient, but in all these Shohei bets, or I'm going to say Ipe bets, there are no bets on baseball, zero. I find that to be dubious, but I am inclined to believe the federal complaint. I guess maybe Ipe was smart enough to know that if you bet on baseball, this could be really, really bad. Now, baseball seems to have skirted this issue. And this is now just like a federal issue. It's not a baseball integrity issue because they didn't find any baseball bets in there. I find it, if I remove the vacuum that I just read the 37-page complaint, that would be the biggest cover-up of all time, which I don't really think it is. I find it very hard to believe that someone that's that bad and they're down $40 million and they probably have access to some inside information, being with the Angels organization, doesn't have a single bet on baseball. But as powerful as I think Major League Baseball is, I don't think they have the juice to like get them to amend a federal complaint. Some listeners can tell me I'm wrong. I would think that was odd. And if their federal complaint wasn't out, I would still be saying this is even more weird, but that's where we're at. Evander Kane, apparently, and I didn't remember this, but one of my students did the research recently. And when they were trying to figure out if Evander Kane bet on hockey, now we're getting called by my 2.5-year-old. This is a dangerous day at the house. But the NHL apparently did like an audit and they tried to figure out what did he bet on. And they, you know, I think they got the records from this illegal bookmaker. He was, I think, Evander Kane reportedly, allegedly, at least as my student told me, was in, he had a lot of gambling sports betting debt, like in the high six figures. But they couldn't get a betting log of what Evander Kane bet on. So I'm like, that's not really how illegal books work or any books work. There is some sort of a log. So I'm like, that kind of sounds cover-up-y. Nobody asked any questions. But Evander Kane, there was no federal complaint with the FBI doing some investigation. You know, Pete Rose, there was the John Dowd report and baseball conveniently, you know, he said he bets on baseball. I only bet on my team to win. Some of the receipts are lost. Doesn't really matter. In this day and age, I don't think you could have a cover-up of that magnitude. I just don't. People have too many questions. Social media is crazy. The journalistic integrity of people going after some of these reports, I think that would come out. So, Zach, as I sit here, I am confident that this is no longer a Major League Baseball issue. I think it's just a interpreter corruption issue. I don't think it's an integrity issue.
Yeah, I think that's the correct assessment. And, you know, going along with the federal charges coming out yesterday, the MLB has suspended their investigation. They're not going to do anything until, you know, the federal charges and case against Ipe have been, you know, tried and figured out. And that seems right. I mean, it really does seem and feel like Shohei really didn't have much to do with it. And if Shohei didn't have much to do with it and he's going to be criminally charged, I feel like that's kind of, like you're saying, kind of the end of it. It's kind of hard to have a massive cover up and saying that it's not. I mean, there is 19,000 records that the auditors went through between those times. And if, I mean, it seems like it's a kind of a done and decided thing for the most part. Again, innocent till proven guilty, but I feel like that's the end of the MLB's particular investigation.
Yeah, that's really it. So we'll see. I mean, it wasn't going to shock anybody if the Major League Baseball sat on their hands, but I was not of the opinion the federal complaint was going to come that quickly. On the other side of the coin, just while we're on the gambling topic, we have a mild update on the NBA's investigation into Jonte Porter. You know, there's some quotes that came out this week. Adam Silver is saying, you know, if what's, you know, comes out about Jonte Porter is true, he's going to get banished for life. He's going to do... Like, do you remember back in the day when Donald Silver got banned for life and there was a, like, Adam Silver was at the podium and he's like, he's banned for life. Jonte Porter might get that treatment. But I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I think it is interesting that Evander Kane, all-star NHL player, a lot of eyes paid attention to him. He's been playing in the NHL, played in the NHL for many years after that incident happened. He was a degenerate sports gambler. Everyone said he's been betting a lot, but there's no receipts that he bets on the NHL. Like, that's interesting. I think superstar players get a little bit of different treatment. I think Pete Rose may be the exception, where baseball just said, like, you know, he was so brazen about it and so obvious about it. But in this day and age, like, we make exceptions. Like, Deshaun Watson, I was talking this in class today, played out the entire, he was not suspended that entire first year, where he was, you know, being accused by 24 women. You know, Alvin Kamara, running back for the Saints, had felony criminal charges against him. He played out the whole year. Matt Ariza, the punter of the Bills, gets an allegation against him that's serious. I would say it's just as serious as the Deshaun Watson stuff, but the NFL kicks him to the curb. Jonte Porter is certainly lower on that spectrum of superstar status. And Adam Silver is making these grand statements that will kick him out of the league. Where was the statement from Rob Manfred the second that this broke, right? The second news broke. Like, if this is true about Shohei Ohtani, we will leave no stone unturned. We will figure this out. And if it's true, we will banish him from the league. Like, didn't say that, right? You know, Roger Goodell didn't say that about Deshaun Watson. We didn't really say anything about Alvin Kamara. Just like Roger Goodell at one point said, we're not going to, we don't think there's enough evidence to prosecute him. And then, like, a year later, when, like, there was maybe more evidence to you know, get him in trouble. I guess what I'm trying to say is that when the leagues feel it appropriate, they make a message of players, and they send a very loud message that's going to be a deterrent. So if you're Jonte Porter, you know, you can threaten to banish him from the league. I think Major League Baseball could probably be doing, could have done a little bit more to say that, you know, we'll leave no stone unturned. We'll figure out this information. I know that Major League Baseball is saying they're not investigating anymore. I think they could have done and can do a little bit more to say that, you know, that this is a terrible thing. This could have been worse. We're going to figure this out. We're going to flesh this out of Major League Baseball, but a little bit conspicuously silent. That's all I want to say.
No, that makes sense. And I am inclined to agree a little bit, at the risk of being boring, as you said earlier, whenever it's just agreeing on the podcast. But I think you're definitely right that there is different treatment for the superstars, and the MLB specifically here definitely could have been more vocal and more quick to react and to respond to these serious allegations. But I think what it comes down to, for, you know, whether it's the NFL, the NBA, or the MLB, it just comes down to the fact that, you know, these people are worth a bunch of money, and the leagues don't want to give up that money. Even if when they've done questionable or outright bad things, whenever it's those star players, there's almost more value, you know, to those leagues to keep them around, or to kind of turn as much of a blind eye as they can. And with that kind of incentive, it's not fair. It's not okay. But that's, I think, exactly what ends up happening. They get a lot of different treatment and can get away with a little bit more simply because of who they are.
So I'm okay to put a pin in this. I don't think there's much to say in it. We'll follow as much as we can, but it's no longer like a sports story. It's more just like a Ipe Mizuhara bank charge story. So I think this could have been a watershed moment for Major League Baseball. I certainly don't feel that way anymore. Okay. As we put this episode in the books, we want to give a big thank you to Themis Bar Review. They sponsored this podcast for many years now. I was just talking to them today. They've been very happy with the synergies. I know some of you will be so kind as to tell Themis that you heard about them through us. But yeah, Zach, they sponsored like your trip to bar passing success, right? Do they get credit for that?
Oh, they definitely get credit for that. It was, you know, 7 days a week, six, seven, sometimes 8 hours a day. But watching the Themis videos, doing the Themis questions, practicing as much as I can, getting through is almost all of the course. And it was a grind, but Themis made it doable and broke it down into good chunks and, you know, helped me to pass, so I don't have to take it again. So very big fan of Themis, the best in not only the country, not only the world, but the entire galaxy, Dan.
They should pay me for that. I should trademark that. Okay. So, you know, big sports weekend. I don't think I had Purdue, to win it all. I'd say I won one of my brackets where I had a Purdue UConn final, but so March Madness has passed. We got the Masters going on. If you keep watching me look to the left, Zach, I have some futures on Scottie Scheffler winning a major this year. So watch very closely. And we got UFC 300 this weekend. It's a lot of sports, a lot of sports. It's all good. Zach, at some point, there is going to be a brewing controversy in Formula One. I'm ready watching for it. I've had you on speed dial, ready to do it if something big happens, similar to the Oscar Pistorius stuff. But, you know, we follow all the sports. I was going to say, like, when they started saying that he bet, like, 25 bets a day, like, during Masters Week, during UFC 300, like, 25 bets, you know. I don't bet large increments. Like, Dave Portnoy had a comment, like, that's wild that he bet $10 on something. Like, obviously, Ipe Mizuhara is betting, like, $100,000 in this, and somehow he bet $10. Yeah, I bet a lot of things, but I bet very small increments. So 25, like, you know, sometimes I'll bet $5 on stuff, $2 on stuff. I am a low increment bettor, but I do bet a lot of different things. But all, you know, it's all fun. It's all good games. Can I give you my pick for the Masters? You'll like this one. So it's very, very degenerate-y, but not like an Ipe Mizuhara stuff, and the fun stuff. You ready for this pick?
Oh, I can't wait, Dan.
This was a fun one. I have obviously a lot of stuff on the big guns, so to speak. DraftKings offered this really cool bet on the big guns. So you could get, I think it was +250 on any combination, any one of the big three of Scheffler, Rory, or Jon Rahm. Scheffler's obviously flirting with the top, but I had a big bet on a top debutante. A debutante, somebody who's never played in the Masters before to win. So A Berg is looking pretty good. So I got that at 10-1. A lot of action, a lot of golfers on my card. So it's all good, Zach. So if you listen, if somebody weird, a first time winner of the Masters wins, just know somewhere I'll be sitting happy. I'm not recommending it, but if you need something to follow along with and you are not a degenerate gambler, kind of like myself, or Ipe Mizuhara, that's what you could watch for. That could be great.
That's definitely something to watch for. It'll be interesting to see if that happens. And I'll be, you know, I was already watching, already planning to continue to watch, but that's going to give me, you know, just the extra reason to make sure I stay tuned in. See if your bet ends up hitting, Dan.
Are the mics picking up my dog barking now? Do you hear her?
Not right now.
She's that A-, B-plus has now gone down to like a B-. She's barking a lot. And I'm not sure why my wife's not telling her to be quiet because she knows I'm recording the podcast, but I guess that's what I get. Okay, Zach. So congrats again to you. That'll do it for us. We'll be back next week. Dan and I have I think we're going to get this. I don't want to say the guest, but we're going to have a guest next week. So people can stay tuned for that. And we're keeping an eye on a couple things brewing, be it Florida State, Rashee Rice. We are on it. But this week, we thought it was important just to talk about one episode, 37-page complaint. Got to cover it. Okay, Zach, that'll do it for us here. To all of us that continue to support Conduct Detrimental, we thank you very much. Big shout out to New York Law School, Pace. Finals are getting closer. My students are listening. Just know the final is a little bit challenging. But if you've been in attention all class and you've been listening to this podcast, A's, you're going to get an A. Can't guarantee it, but like probably. Okay, let's end it here. Thanks again, Zach. And we'll see you all next time on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.